Thanks for joining us again today for Lili Logic. Go to lililogic.com for more info, and you'll find the podcast available on all of the regular platforms. You can also find us, in addition to Facebook and Instagram, on Blue Sky and TikTok. I'm back today with Doc Anderson, and Doc's story is, He is a professional musician here in Atlanta, an old friend of mine. And in betwixt and between, he ended up getting arrested, going to federal prison for several years, and getting into recovery from his meth addiction. And so one of the things that we had been talking about is the benefits of some of the programs in prison. So, Doc, you thought this was a good program for you.
For me, yes, they were. So an addict can only get help when he wants it, and somebody can better themselves only when they want to.
Yeah.
And so it would have been possible for me to go to prison and sit and play cards all day and watch TV. I could have done that, right? It wouldn't have been of any benefit to me. It would have just passed the time. And for some people, you know, prison is a great place because they have no responsibilities. And they, in fact, I know that if you had come to the prison and said, hey, we are opening the gates, and if you want to go, you can go. You're free. There are people who would have clung to their bunks and not left.
So the world was too scary, or they were so comfortable?
Well, the world is hard. You know, yeah. I mean, you have to make decisions, and you have to have choices, and you have to be responsible, and you have to, you know, you have to be an adult. You have to take care of yourself. You have to take care of other people. You have to show up for your job. You have to listen to what your boss says. Like, if you're in prison, you can just really wake up and eat and play cards and watch TV. And, you know, that's a really easy existence. If you can follow directions and, like, don't mind sitting when they tell you to sit and standing when they tell you to stand and going to the bathroom when they tell you to go to the bathroom and eat when and what they tell you to eat. If you're good with all of those things, you know, prison might be a good place for you, especially if you don't like responsibility.
Well, and when you were there, you gave back. And I'm sure that gave so much to you to have a purpose, a mission, and you enriched other people.
Yeah.
So was that hard for you to get that started? Or were they like, hey, man, go for it?
No. Well, so at first, the person who was in charge of the rec department when I got there, she'd been there for a long time. And she had had piano teachers before and it hadn't worked out. And even though it was still officially on the offering of courses, she wouldn't let it happen. So, but soon after I got there, they got a new director, and he was awesome. He was the best staff member at the prison, and I was fortunate enough to get to work with him, right? He was a really nice human being, not always the case for the men and women that worked at the prison. But this guy was really nice. He was actually a singer himself, so he kind of understood, you know, where I came from. He was also a failed fast food employee, so that hadn't worked out for him. So he decided to go work at the federal prison instead. Like, I could make copies of the one piano instruction book that we had. I think I may have ordered that for myself and then made copies for my students. So at first I was teaching a music theory class, and okay, I think I paid either $20 or $25 a month by the prison for teaching class. And so then I added. And so then I added 20 piano students a week, and my pay went up to $25.73, I think is what it was. And so I was adding 10 hours of teaching. I had been teaching for 2 hours a week, and I added 10 hours of teaching. So I thought, you know, I would make more money.
You got a 73 cent raise.
I got a 73 cent raise. And so I went to this new guy, right, who was nice. And I said, hey, I think there might have been a mistake on my pay. I said, because, you know, I was teaching 2 hours a week and I made $25, and now I'm teaching 12 hours a week and I'm making $25.73. He said, yeah, that's all we got for you, man. I'm like, okay, at least I'm doing what I like, you know? And what I didn't realize at the time, but which quickly became apparent, is that, but we only had one piano. And so that was where I taught, and also where they would have to practice. So they had to basically fight for practice time. They had to show up on a Sunday morning at a certain time to sign up. And if they weren't one of the first ones in line, then they probably were not going to get much practice time. So they would have to, like, practice standing at their locker on a paper keyboard that they had drawn, not exactly the same. And also, they thought that in 6 or 8 weeks, I would be able to teach them everything that they needed to know about playing the piano.
Oh.
So a lot of them, after the first couple of lessons, they would drop. Well, their time was still reserved, and I was still in the studio waiting for them, right? Because they could still show up. So what that meant was that for 2 hours every day, I had time with just myself and a piano and maybe one other human being in the room, which gave me a lot of quiet time. And if nobody else showed up, I got to practice or compose or whatever. So again, I was so fortunate. Like, I was so lucky. Sorry, I've strayed a little bit off topic. So
No, you're on topic. I mean, I'm tracking. I love this.
anyway, as far as like the programs that are offered, yeah. Like, if you take advantage of everything that's offered, you can make such a difference in yourself. And for me, obviously, the big change for me was the rehab program, and that's where I made the most growth for sure. I had to be in the right mindset. There are people who went through the rehab program that I know who are actually already back in prison, and who were actually back in prison years ago because they were more comfortable there, and they thought they could go back to selling drugs and not have the same consequences,
Yeah, doesn't work like that.
No, it doesn't. And I mean, it's the definition of insanity, doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. But early on in the program, there was a page, a lesson that day about the roadblocks that we would be throwing up to our own success. And they were thoughts like, I'm educated, or I'm intelligent, or I've had some rehab or therapy before. I'm not as bad as the other guys in this program, several other things. And as I was walking around the compound one night after dinner, the compound was a kind of a pleasant place. There was a lot of grass, the sidewalk, like kind of like a college quadrangle, if you will, right? Buildings all around, a couple of trees out there. There would be seagulls at different times of the year and other birds. I mean, it was not horrible. It was in Florida. And so I was walking around one of the sidewalks after dinner for a little exercise, and I just kind of stopped and had this moment of realization where I was like, wait a second, all those roadblocks, I'm not thinking one of them or two of them. I'm thinking literally all of them. Literally every roadblock
Okay.
that I might be throwing up to my own recovery, I was thinking. And that's when I thought, the people that wrote this book have never met me, but they have pegged me. Like, they know how my brain is working. How is that possible? Well, clearly, I have something in common with other addicts, right? With other people who have these issues. So maybe there is something to this program. If I fail out of this, because at this point I was not convinced about the rehab program. Like, it kind of felt like brainwashing, and I didn't trust it, and it seemed like, I don't know if this is going to work. And do I,
Did you think you were an addict at that time?
Oh, sure.
You knew.
Oh,
Okay.
yeah. No question about that. Like,
Okay.
I've known for decades that I was an addict. Came from a family of addiction. My dad was an alcoholic, brother was an alcoholic. Turns out another brother had issues with alcohol that I didn't even know about. Addiction is rife in my family. So I had no problem admitting that I was an addict, knowing that I was an addict. So I thought, if I fail out of this prison rehab program, that's going to be another disappointment to my family. Like, how do I tell my family I couldn't even make it in this prison rehab program? I couldn't even survive that. And then I also thought, and plus, if I blow this chance, which they were paying us for, they paid us $150 over the course of the 10 months in three different payments. I think it was 100, maybe it's 100 and maybe it's 120, something like that. $40 or $50 three times. And so I said, if I fail out of this, and then I would decide later in life that I want rehab on the outside, it's going to cost me an arm and a leg, right?
Amen.
It's going to be so expensive. I'm like, I can't mess this up. And so I thought, okay, I'm just going to do it, right? I'm just going to surrender to the program. I'm just going to say yes. And whatever they tell me I need to do, that's what I'm going to do. Whatever they tell me I need to think or believe or act or write or whatever, I'm just gonna do it. I'm gonna buy it hook, line, and sinker. And then if it works for me, great. And if it doesn't, then I guess I'll go back to what I was doing.
Right. And then you tried.
I
So you
tried.
could say, I tried it.
Tried it. And so it quickly became apparent that what they were telling me was really great and very helpful and life-changing. I just had these realizations at different points along the way. When I finally realized the thought that I'd had as a child that led to my eventual drug use, which was, if my family knew my secret, it would be really bad. That was the thought that I had as a tiny child. I mean, like 2 or 3 years old, probably, maybe 4 at the oldest. When I realized that that thought was what had led to my drug use, and also at the same time realized that my family still loved me when I was in federal prison. And if they could still love me when I was in federal prison for dealing drugs across state lines, then they had certainly loved that little 2 or 3 or 4 year old who had never done anything wrong in his life. That they had loved me then, they had loved me ever since then, and they love me now. And that's all I really needed was the love and acceptance for my family, which I thought I didn't have deep down, not on the surface. If you had asked me, does your
Right.
family love you? I would have said, oh, absolutely,
Oh, of course they love me.
But deep down, if they really knew all the bad things that I thought and felt, they couldn't possibly really love me. That's the subconscious stuff I was dealing with. Anyway, once I realized, oh, that thought was only real in my head. They didn't feel that way. I felt that way. They didn't. And when I realized that they didn't, and that it had only been real in my head, that need for drugs just disappeared. It was like literally like a switch had been flipped.
Isn't
And
it amazing too? Like for me, it wasn't that I didn't want to be an addict. I didn't want to be an alcoholic. I just didn't want to feel the pain.
right. No, nobody wants to be a drug addict, right? I had somebody accuse me once since prison of wanting to be a criminal, and that's why I had done the things that I did. I was like, I'm sorry, we're gonna have to break this down. I didn't want to be a criminal. I just wanted to not feel the pain that I was feeling, and that's the only way I knew how to do it was to numb it, right?
And the thing is, for a long time for me, it worked. Eventually, it quit working. And that was really disappointing, which is when I decided I'm going to quit because this isn't working anymore. And I kept doing more and more, and the results
Nothing. Yeah.
were nil. Yeah, exactly. So, Doc, you think this was in your highest good, ultimately, that this bottom led you to where you are today. What do you sort of, and I know gratitude is one of your pillars, what do you see for yourself now and then you're giving back and how this impacts not just your personal world, but the world, so to speak, that you come in contact with?
Yeah, just like I started telling you my story immediately when we reconnected a few days ago. That's just my approach to the world because every time I tell my story, I find, I mean, not completely without exception, but almost without exception, that the person that I'm talking to, their life has been touched by addiction as well. Even if they are not addicts themselves, they have a loved one who has struggled with addiction. Very often, the person that I'm talking to, like you, has also struggled with addiction, and so it brings us together immediately as human beings. One of the great things that I love about the church where I work is not the music program. Even though I love the music program, I'm in charge of it, and I love all the musicians that I work here with, all of my choir members and my bell choir members, and I have a beautiful room to play and have a great instrument to play. But we have an outreach program here, which really provides substantial assistance to people in need.
Love it.
In fact, when I first started here, my partner and I were out at lunch, and he still had on his name tag from church, and so it said the church name up there. And the waitress came to our table and saw his name tag, and she said, "Oh, that's that little church that helps people, right?" And
Oh,
what a
God.
wonderful way to be known in the community, right? So obviously most of my work here is in the music program, but every once in a while I get to have an outreach experience. And a couple of weeks ago I was downstairs making copies for my choir for something that night. And the rest of the staff, the priest and our outreach director and our church administrator, they were all in a noonday service that happens on Wednesdays, which doesn't have music, right? It's just all spoken. But they were all over in the sanctuary having worship. And so I was the only one in the office. And I hear a really loud, urgent knock on the door. And so I go and check to see who it is. And there are three women there who are asking for assistance. And I'm like, well, I can't answer your questions because I'm not the person who's in charge of outreach, but I can get you something to drink. And if you need some food, we have a food pantry here. And you can just come in and help yourself. I'll give you the bags that you need, and you take whatever you need. Like, I'm not gonna make your choices for you. I don't know what you need. So you just help yourself. And I said, I'm gonna finish my copying work up here, and then I'll be back to check on you in a few minutes. And so I went back, and they had taken me at my word, and
They
had
shopped.
they really shopped, right? They were laden with food, but that's what it's there for, right? And if they can walk out with it, they are welcome to it. So then I just took the time and just said, and so what are your names? And suddenly things changed because I bothered to ask.
Yeah, they were human then.
Yeah, they were human, and they knew they were, and they knew that they weren't a bother, or that I thought of them as less than, or something like that. Like they like I was actually happy to see them. One of the women was clearly struggling with substance abuse, and she was also the most laden with food, and she took her parcels and she kind of went on out the door. But then two of the other women, who were, I think, a little bit embarrassed by her behavior, stayed back and chatted a bit more. And then another one went out to find her friend. And then the third woman stayed the longest. And she was so thankful for not only the food, but just for what I had offered, which was nothing but a smile and asking her name.
Being seen,
Yeah,
you saw
absolutely.
her.
Yeah, I saw her. And she hugged me, and she was just so grateful. And I was like, I'm so glad I had a chance to meet you today, and I hope I get to see you again. It was so clear that they were just not accustomed to being treated this way, or being seen this way, or being cared for in this way. And the amount of effort that it took on my part was nothing. Like, just nothing, just a few words and a smile. Like, who doesn't have time for that? Who doesn't have the energy for that? Come on, we can be better humans. And
And it came naturally to you. You treated them just like you would have treated anybody that had walked in.
right.
That is beautiful. And I guess that's it. You're just showing up where you're at, and whatever comes into your life, that's where you deliver.
Yep, absolutely. And another thing that that I got that was so important to me from the rehab program was truly living authentically as me at all times. Like, I don't like that. That's why everybody knows my story, right? I'm not about to hide my history from somebody. It's just so much easier to be truthful all the time about everything, and that because I'm too old. I can't remember all the lies. So, and I used to like there was always an excuse for why I was late or why I'm not feeling well. And now I don't have an excuse. If I'm not feeling well, I'm not feeling well because I'm old and I got this problem. And
Right. Yeah.
but it, there's
Not
nothing
because you've been
wrong.
up for 3 days,
Right,
right?
exactly. Yeah. It's wonderful to be able to be a real, authentic person at all times. I've never had
And
it.
I think, too, that is the greatest gift we can give the world, give ourselves. And it's taken me many, many years. I mean, I've been in radio and doing podcasts for years and years. This is the first time I dropped all the mask and the persona. And I was like, okay, here's who I am. And, not everybody's cup of tea. That's okay.
Fine. Somebody will drink, right? Somebody's gonna drink. So
Yeah. Yeah. It's.
The biggest gift that we can give to the world is ourselves, like who we are.
Yeah.
I'm the only doc there is, right?
You are. You are the only doc.
And you're the only Lisa,
Yeah.
So I mean, so we are all that we have to give the world.
And I love that note to end on because it's so simple, not easy, but it's so simple. Just be us and be kind and be loving. So thank you.
You're so welcome. Thank you for the invitation.
Oh, I hope you'll come back again. I always love talking to you. Wow. My friend Doc Anderson, professional musician here in Atlanta, and so good to have him on the podcast today. I think we've left on a very hopeful and exciting note. My name is Lisa Smith Henderson. This is Lili Logic. If you want to know more about the podcast, you can go to lililogic.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.